This is episode 20, Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, featuring Lauren O'Donnell of Green Pop.
You're tuning in to Trash Talking with Eco Warriors, where women share inspiring stories about their careers in green business, sustainability, and conservation. Here's your host and founder of Trashy Beauty, Barbara Lee.
O'Donnell hadn't expected to start a tree planting organization. In fact, it was over a casual dinner party conversation that her and 10 of her friends decided to embark on a personal challenge: plant 1,000 trees in 1 month to help offset their own carbon footprints. Well, that challenge has never ended. 7 years later, the group, now known as Green Pop, has planted over 82,000 trees. If you haven't heard, Cape Town, South Africa, where Lauren lives, is facing a huge water crisis. The city is going to run out of water on what the town is calling day zero, somewhere around the early part of May. As part of the water cycle, trees are actually part of the solution to solving the water crisis. As trees move water through their roots and into the atmosphere, water particles from clouds fall back to the earth as rain. Deforestation creates a challenge to this cycle, as water is no longer moved through it. Unfortunately, given that the town is on such strict water restrictions, Lauren and her friends have had to put a pause on some of their planting efforts. I think this harrowing situation in Cape Town is a reminder to everyone of the importance of conserving water. When you're in a city and water runs freely, it can seem as if it's quite unlimited, when in reality, clean water is a finite resource. This is a very relevant topic, and Lauren's words are actually quite powerful. I really hope that you take away something important from this episode and maybe find some inspiration to plant some trees. Also, tune in to the very end, where we answer a listener question about plastic recycling and the recent news about China refusing to accept plastics being sent from the US. We have Sam Silver from Sims Municipal Recycling, New York City, to answer this listener question. Let's get trash talking. So Lauren, welcome to Trash Talking.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're coming into us from all the way in South Africa.
Yes, all the way from Cape Town, South Africa.
And tell me a little bit about what it is that you do there.
So I run an organization called Green Pop. We're a tree planting and environmental education organization. And we started 7 years ago, just as a group of friends who wanted to plant 1,000 trees. And yeah, 7 years later, we've got an organization and doing all sorts of environmental projects.
Awesome. And how many trees?
We've just gone over 83,000 trees.
Wow, that's incredible. And where is this concentrated? Where are you guys planting?
So we've got projects, various different programs. Most of our trees are planted in a reforestation project 2.5 hours from Cape Town. It's called Platbos. It's an ancient indigenous forest that has been deforested over the years. So a lot of them are there, but we've also got a program in Cape Town City Centre, which is an urban greening project. And then we've got a program in Zambia, and we're about to start one in Malawi. And we've got one in the Eastern Cape, which is a different province of South Africa.
Cool. That's amazing. Congrats. That's such great work.
Thank you. It's exciting.
And so tell me a little bit more about Green Pop, and then also why is this so important to you? Why did you get started on this?
So 7 years ago, I was living with my boyfriend at the time, now husband, and a friend. My husband, Misha, was traveling around the world filming a documentary for Volkswagen. And on the way back, somehow a conversation started in the airplane around how many air miles they had flown. And it was a lot, 360,000 air miles or something to that effect. Ooh. And some website told them that their team should plant 661 trees. He wanted to action this project. He wanted to do something about it and actually plant the trees. So he started embarking on research around how he could do it. And we had a dinner party with a group of 10 friends around that time. And we thought, well, why don't we all get involved and create a friend challenge. So it was 10 friends. We gave ourselves one month, and we rounded the number up to 1,000 trees, because we all had done international travel in the past, and we live in a city, we all have an environmental footprint. So it was 10 friends, 1 month, 1,000 trees as a campaign. And we embarked on this campaign just almost as a on the whim challenge, I guess. And it took us that month to complete the challenge. We learned so many lessons, and we tried and we failed, and we did all sorts of different things to raise money and to learn where and how to plant trees, et cetera, et cetera. To cut a long story short, it kind of never ended. So 7 years later, we are 82,000 trees down and still going.
Wow, that's incredible.
Very unexpected. It was not planned to be an organization. After that month, when we had done the 1,000 trees, we thought it would be finished. And we went back to our jobs. All 10 of us were working. The three of us, me, Misha, and Jeremy, were freelancing. So we had this thought, well, if there's a need, we could continue, but we'll go back to our freelance work. And we just kept getting calls. We got calls from schools saying, school down the road got trees, how can we be involved? And we got calls from companies wanting to help us out and come along with us and plant trees and sponsor trees. So we were just kind of slowly, organically meeting the demand.
That's so
and
cool.
And then, yeah, it was all very organic. We won a small business social enterprise competition in the beginning, and that prompted us to get registered and become an official organization. And the rest, I guess, is history.
There's so much I want to dig into, but I really want you to like explain a little bit more about like why you had this inkling to even want to try to offset your carbon footprint and why that was important to you.
So I was writing, I was a journalist. Misha was a cameraman on various films, and Jeremy was a musician who had come back from working on the yachts in the Mediterranean and was starting his musical career. Prompted us in the beginning, to be very honest, was just the challenge. We wanted to give ourselves a challenge. I would say we would have called ourselves greenies, but we wouldn't necessarily have called ourselves environmentalists. We were quite passionate about living a green lifestyle in a city and recycling and doing the best we could, but we didn't have careers in this field at all. The initial drive was that we wanted a challenge, and we wanted to bring Arbor Month back. So Arbor Month in South Africa is the tree planting month, and it's traditionally in September, which is when we began. And so that was the initial drive, get our friends and family involved again in planting trees during this month. And then I think after that, our motivation changed as we saw the huge need in Cape Town and South Africa in general. But in Cape Town, there's a very divided geographical cultural society because of our history of apartheid. So you'll get informal settlements where there are very little resources and very little trees, and wealthy areas where there are lots of trees and greenery. So it's quite a stark difference. The leafy suburbs have wealth and leaves. We learned that, we saw that by going into township areas and informal settlements and just seeing how our fellow South Africans are living and realizing that we could be greening these areas and uplifting spaces through creating pride of place and bringing in ecological ecoservices and biodiversity and beauty as well. So it started as quite an urban greening project.
That's so cool.
But it's morphed and we've got other projects now. But I wouldn't have considered myself an environmentalist. I guess I was, like I said, in it for the challenge, and I was interested in the space. But I've learned so many things, and one of the main things I've learned over the last 7 years is that we actually all don't have a choice. Whether we see ourselves as environmentalists or not, we are nature. We are nature. We're the same as nature. We're part of this natural ecosystem. And if we don't start really integrating with our ecosystem, which is our planet, then it's the end of us. So I'm so passionate about it now, after learning all these lessons, simple lessons that should be obvious. But I think we become very disconnected living in cities and in our lives from the fact that we are nature. You know, we separate ourselves in so many ways. We build roads under our feet and we live in high-rise buildings. All of that is necessary and part of living in a city. But we need to remember to go back to our nature and to really think about how we're living. So that drives me now. This is very healthy for humans to be in touch with our nature, and our planet is our only home.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And I think it's really interesting because I have friends who are from South Africa, and I think that the mentality around how we interact with our planet and how we care for it is very different on different parts of the world. Especially now, you guys are facing quite a crisis in South Africa.
Yeah, we're facing a huge water crisis, especially here in the city of Cape Town at the moment. So I think that the topic is becoming very prevalent for a negative reason. Obviously, it's very scary, but it is opening people's eyes to how we have been living.
Talk to us a little bit more. Tell us what's going on there.
The city of Cape Town is running out of water. Literally, on the 11th of May is day zero, which will be the day that the city and the government turns off our water, turns off our taps, because our dams will run dry on that day if their predictions are correct. So at the moment, we're on level 6B water restrictions, which is that every individual is allowed to use 50 liters of water a day in total, which includes things like everyone only flushing their household toilet once per day, having two showers a week. Every single drop of grey water in the house must go into the toilet system for recycled use of the water, etc., etc. And if it rains and if we save enough, the date may be pushed out, because it was 24th of April, I think, and it has now moved to the 11th of May because of certain interventions that the city has done and because of the saving. Mm-hmm. But it still seems very imminent, and it seems like it's going to happen.
Oh, wow. What has led to this issue other than consumption? Like, why has this happened?
I think it's a good question and quite a political one. Many people are arguing why it's happening. But my perspective is that we have been in a drought for many years. We're in a severe drought at the moment. We haven't had good rains in winter for many years. And coupled with that, we haven't managed our water very well in the city. We haven't caught it very well. We haven't got enough catchment systems. And I think some people say that it was actually predicted in the 90s that this would happen in Cape Town unless certain interventions happened. And I think people didn't take note. So now we're building desalination plants and better catchment areas and all of that. So I think it's a case of use, overuse, management, and drought.
That's really scary because we have a similar issue here in the States, in the West Coast, especially the area near California, where it's in a severe drought. We had one really good year of rain. We had one good rain season, and it's been unseasonably warm. There's been so many forest fires. It's very ominous.
So scary. Yeah. I think the situation is probably similar in Cape Town and California.
So this is what's really interesting to me, is that I know by research that I've done in working on reforestation projects that planting more trees can really help the water life cycle on our planet and can really help bring rains to certain areas.
Absolutely, yes. Unfortunately, right now, in the middle of the crisis, we've had to pause our urban tree planting because there really just isn't water for the first patch of a tree's life. Oh. But our reforestation projects are still continuing, and it's a bit of a catch-22. It's,
sure,
you know, if you plant trees, you're planting rain, but right now there's no water to get the trees to survive their first few years. So that's the situation in the city. But in the reforestation areas, as you say, it's so important to plant trees, and they really do bring the rain. They really do bring weather systems and microclimates, and we are just cutting down trees all over the world, as you know, all the time. So
yeah,
trees are part of the solution. It is a long-term solution, but it's very important. It's becoming so clear to all of us who live in Cape Town that the time is right now.
Thank you for sharing that story. How do you stay inspired when you have a tough moment like this?
Yeah, this is the toughest challenge probably for us as an organization. I think I'm motivated, well, by the fact that planting trees is part of the solution. So it's a challenging time right now, but if we continue to do what we're doing, things can and will change. And also, I think what we do is not only planting trees, it's also spreading a lot of education. And so even though it's very challenging now and the messaging is kind of doom and gloom, it also does, I believe, and we believe as an organization, in trying to inspire getting active, not anxious, about the future of our planet. Even when I'm feeling uninspired myself, I need to remember that mantra, because if we do just get anxious, you can kind of get into a sneaky hate spiral of not doing anything. And if we all become too anxious and the doom and gloom messaging around climate change becomes too big and too scary, then we feel like we can't change it. But we can, and we have to, and we have to act. If we do that all together right now, we can make a change.
That's awesome. I love that. Yeah, you guys have had some amazing campaigns. So that's actually how I found you, was a friend of mine who's from South Africa. She actually, my friend Dana does the intro for my podcast. So.
Oh, thank you. Yes, that was our Got Bush campaign. So we actually, we did a campaign last September for Arbor Month called Got Wood, promoting trees and tree planting and fundraising for trees. And we did, it was a whole, like, a kind of a male naked shoot later. And then we thought a year later we must do women, so we called it Got Bush. And it fitted in quite perfectly with a change in one of our programs that we're going through, where we're moving from only trees into planting fynbos, which is the endemic species of plant that exists here in Cape Town on Table Mountain. It's called fynbos, which means in English fine bush.
And bush being like your slang for the wilderness or the wild.
Absolutely, yes.
Just to clarify that for people who don't actually know that connotation.
Yes.
Who are your role models? Like, where do you get your inspiration from?
So one of my role models is Wangari Maathai, who was part of our inspiration for starting this project. Just the way she managed to get so many trees planted and bring in so many women into the process, spread it all around Kenya. It was amazing. And we were lucky enough to get a little film filmed by her daughter. We knew somebody in Kenya, and her daughter is Wanjira Maathai, who gave a film message to us for one of our festivals.
And do you have other books or podcasts or a movie or a documentary?
I love Planet Earth. Obviously, David Attenborough.
Yeah.
I just feel like that's such an inspiration for wonder. I think things like those type of documentaries which show the beauty and the wonder of nature are effective. Obviously, they are very pertinent documentaries that are about the horrible things that happen. Sometimes too many of those things can be demotivating to some people. Not to me, but I can understand how psychologically it can be demotivating.
Absolutely. And do you have any brands that you really love because of what they're doing, or companies that you think people should kind of have a watchful eye for because they're doing amazing things in the green space?
Here in Cape Town, we're very lucky to have some very small local inspirational companies. We have a big office space in town, and we don't need the whole space, so we actually sublease the top floor to a group of companies, and we've seemed to attract such amazing, like-minded companies, various health food companies who are trying their best to not have any packaging. We've got a cool company called Happy Earth People that sells pasta made of lentils and chickpeas.
Nice.
So no wheat used, and it's all like packaged very well. And there's another company called Wazoogles, which is a superfood company that's also fully trying to do everything as ethically and as beautifully as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And what is your one tip for someone who wants to live a more eco-conscious lifestyle?
Sure. Sometimes I wonder what my one tip is, because I feel like everyone could do something that suits their life, because I find sometimes if my tip doesn't suit the way you're living, you'll be against it and then not start doing it. So I often say, as long as we're all moving towards a darker shade of green and not in the other direction, if we imagine almost like concentric circles of a tree ring, and the bullseye, the center, is the darkest shade of green, and outside goes lighter and lighter and lighter. And as long as people are moving towards a darker shade of green, we're all on a journey. But I guess if I had to choose my one tip, I would say we need to reduce our meat and dairy consumption. Think about factory farming and learn about where our food is coming from, and just choose one day a week, if it's that, and make a start at reducing our intake of factory farmed animal products. That would be my one tip, because I feel like that's got quite a large impact.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so funny. I don't know if you're familiar with companies like Impossible Foods and how these companies are trying to make non-meat meat products that are very specifically targeted towards meat eaters. They make a burger that literally sizzles and smells and browns just like a regular burger.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. And I think it's the way forward. It's the way forward. If we're going to feed so many people on this earth, we need to eat more plant-based.
And do you have a crazy or funny story about nature or sustainability, like while you've been doing your work now?
One thing that was kind of crazy is that we had a big festival where we plant lots of trees, and we were aiming to plant about 4,000 trees in a day with about, I think we had about 400 people that day. And it was just going so well. And we were planting and people were having fun and there was good conversation and drumming and music and the trees were going in and they were being planted so well. And by the end of the day, we'd planted 7,000 trees in a day and we hadn't really realized everyone was on a roll. So we managed to almost double what we had planned, which was funny for us, but it was incredible.
That's amazing. How long ago was this?
So now we actually do this more regularly because we realized we could, but we didn't think we could beforehand. The first time this happened, it was in 2013 at our Platbos Reforest Fest, which is a big tree planting festival. And then we have some music afterwards as part of the weekend. We had just begun, so we had been doing it for 2 to 3 years and we thought, you know, there was definitely a max number. We didn't want to push people and we didn't know how it would go. Yeah, now it's possible and now we do it more regularly.
That's amazing. Well, congrats. It's been such an amazing story that you have.
Thank you. Yeah, it's very exciting. It's a journey every day and we're learning a lot as we go. So it's a constant journey and a constant learning experience, but that's what makes it very exciting.
And how can people get in touch with you if they're interested in hearing more about your project or if they want to support the work that you're doing?
So our website is www.greenpop.org. So Green Pop for us is like making greening popular. And all of our contact details are on there. We're also on social media, Facebook and Instagram and Twitter as Green Pop. But we'd love people to get in touch. And if they're in South Africa, come and join us at one of our festivals. We believe in mass action. So bringing lots of people together to do good work and have fun at the same time. And if you're in another country, just connect with us. And we've got various ways that people have become activists for us or activists in their own community.
Yeah, I'll definitely look into when your festivals are. When's your next big event?
So the next one is in March. It's that big one. So it's 2 weekends. The first weekend is the Family Fest from the 16th of March weekend. And the following weekend is the Friends Fest. And we basically, it's a Friday night and a Saturday night. And the whole day on Saturday, we plant trees. And the Saturday night, we have a music, lots of live bands and local talent. And the whole day on Sunday, we have talks about sustainability and crafting sessions and gatherings and yoga and all sorts of fun stuff the whole day on Sunday. So it's a tree planting day and a workshop talk walk day and lots of good music. And cool. That's in March.
Awesome. Sounds fantastic. I'll definitely link the information in the show notes for Lauren's website as well as the event. So if anyone's interested in going or if they want to tell their friends who live on that side of the world, definitely check it out.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Hey, so what was that documentary that your husband was filming that started this whole thing?
Oh, it was completely unrelated. He was filming a under 13 football. It was a documentary that his company that he was working for was contracted to do by Volkswagen. And they had to film developmental football around the world. And so they had to film these under 13 little football teams in all different countries. And then there was a tournament at the end in Germany. So it was completely unrelated. The conversation about the carbon footprint happened in the plane on the way home.
Yeah, but that's beautiful. Maybe reach out to Volkswagen. Maybe they want to sponsor your program.
Yeah, they actually have. They've given us...
Oh, there you go.
They lent us some vehicles to get to our Zambia project. One year we took our team from South Africa to Zambia. We've been doing it for 6 years, but the one year we went in a fleet of Volkswagen vehicles, which was great.
That's so cool. And so how do you green your actual events? Because I know that this is always like a huge question. And we're actually going to be having an event in April where we show the Wasted Food documentary. And I'm wondering, like, what do you guys do? What are the steps that you guys make to make sure that the festivals and these big things that you're putting on are green?
Yeah, that's very important. We do everything we can. So it's from full on recycling and composting of everything at an event, which takes planning and potentially some important strategic partnerships with other local NGOs or companies, because everything at any of our events must be either upcycled, ideally upcycled. And if it can't be upcycled, then recycled.
Sure.
And all the food waste must obviously be composted or not wasted in the beginning. That takes a lot of planning, but it's very, very important to get that right. And it depends where we are. So when we're in Zambia, for example, there isn't recycling. So everything has to be upcycled. So anything like glass has to go to a local entrepreneur who crushes it and makes bricks out of glass. And the Tetra Pak that can't be recycled has to be made into crafts that can be sold at the craft market.
Wow.
And anything that is absolutely not recyclable, we stuff into a 2-liter cool drink bottle and make eco bricks and then build with eco bricks.
Yeah, that's amazing. It really is about being creative and figuring out like what are the different ways that you have to address each of these issues.
Absolutely. And it's difficult and it takes a lot of planning, but if you're going to have a green event, especially like you say in another country or city, you need to research what's going on there and try to find people who can use the resources and really see the waste, not as waste, but as resource for somebody else. And then the food that you have at an event should be sourced as locally and as sustainably as possible. Also very different in different areas.
Sure.
So it's supporting local farmers or local businesses.
Oh, fantastic. Lauren, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for being on the show. We really love these stories and it's so great to get an international perspective once in a while.
Thank you so much for having me. It's amazing to be on your show.
We didn't forget about our listener question. So thank you to the lovely Sarah from the Pacific Northwest for writing in and asking us to clarify on the recycling issue that is happening right now. We have Sam Silver from the Sims Municipal Recycling to give us his weigh-in. Without further ado, let's jump into our question.
I'm Sam Silver. I run an education and outreach program at Sims Municipal Recycling, a really large sorting facility in New York City.
So Sarah from the Pacific Northwest says to us, one of my goals this year is to start using way less plastic, and I began thinking about which plastics can and can't be recycled. For the longest time, I would just throw any plastics into a recycling bin, but I recently heard that China is refusing to take the majority of the U.S.'s recyclables. So Sam, do you want to weigh in on that issue?
So a lot of folk have been hearing about China's recent what they're accepting. For a very long time, a lot of facilities, especially if you're on the West Coast, some parts of Europe, and even all the way over to the Midwest of the United States, have been sending these mixed packages of compressed plastic. They were numbers 3 through 7. They weren't too clean. They had some pretty high levels of contamination with other things mixed in, but China was, for a while, willing to accept it and willing to pay for it. Now, as of last year, China's initiated a new ban and restrictions on what they're accepting. So what's ended up happening is a lot of West Coast facilities, they're not used to sorting to a higher quality, so they have these mixed bales of plastics, they have no market for them because they can't sell them to China, and they're stuck. They have to sometimes landfill, they have to cease recycling programs, and really start thinking about investing in better sorting practices. So what's going on with China, of course, doesn't affect every part of the United States or the world uniformly, but the prices for plastics really across the entire world have dropped down quite a bit. So a lot of recycling programs are seeing lower margins. They're kind of cutting it pretty close to the edge in terms of the economic viability of the whole system.
So what can individual people do about this issue?
There's really two ways you can think about it. One is upstream in terms of how packaging and waste are being produced on the manufacturing level. And the other is something that you can do really every single day. The impact of people putting the wrong things in the recycling bin, whether they're just maybe not being super careful and putting some trash in the recycling bin, or if you're wish cycling, you know, just hoping that it gets recycled. And what ends up happening is it really reduces the efficiency of the entire recycling chain.
What are the things that I should be looking at to make sure that I'm putting only the right type of recyclable materials in?
Definitely just check your local recycling rules. So you just want to check to make sure if you're putting out your recycling in a bin that you're keeping those general material categories in separate places if it's required.
Is there a certain type of plastic that I shouldn't be throwing into my bin?
Generally, plastics number 1, 2, and sometimes 5 are the most commonly accepted in recycling programs. If you ever look on the bottom of a plastic package and you see those little chasing arrows, that recycling symbol,
yeah,
it actually doesn't mean it is recyclable where you live, right? It's just the plastic resin code. It's what type of plastic that package is made from. So if you're in a city where you have to check for that, just look. You know, usually a water bottle is going to be a number 1. Shampoo bottles or laundry detergent bottles or milk jugs are usually number 2s. And those are generally accepted almost everywhere.
So it's great to know that New York City has such a comprehensive plastic recycling. Of course, I guess it comes to the end user. If we use less plastic, there's going to be less in our waste stream. What are some of the other things you mentioned that, you know, with the petroleum cost coming down, that this is actually what's driving some of the market away from buying recycled plastic and upcycling plastic?
Yeah. So right now, especially with a lot of this activity happening right now with China, essentially you've got a much higher supply within the U.S. of these mixed plastics that now have to find a new home. As a result, a lot of plastic processors, which are basically the facilities that chop up plastics, melt them down, grind them, wash them, and turn them into these plastic pellets, which are really the raw ingredient if you're making something out of recycled material. They're basically just asking for much lower prices because they know this material needs to move. So ultimately what's going on is that supply isn't really the issue. People throw a ton of stuff away every single day. Now the economics around purchasing recycled or running recycling programs within cities, that's been kind of thrown for a loop and in a bit of a shock. So ultimately, if you're actually just contributing less plastic to the mix, if you're finding substitutes yourself for those single-use disposable plastics, you can kind of get around that issue altogether. I think one of the most effective tools to learn a lot more about what happens with your waste is, if it's possible, visit the next place where your trash or where your recycling goes. One thing that I would suggest is, when it comes to bottle caps, a lot of folks tend to just have those loose in their recycling bins. You're actually going to get those recycled a lot better if you keep it on the bottle. It'll make its way to the next facility. But if I'm thinking now about straws and plastic forks and plastic utensils, I would actually really try to avoid using those altogether. Their size is a really big issue, and they're usually not recoverable because they're so small.
This has been so fascinating. I've even learned some things. Thank you so much for being on the show, Sam, and for helping to answer this listener's question.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and also, if people want to reach you, I know that, one, people can go and visit the SIN Center if they would like to, and two, how can people reach out to you?
Feel free to contact me. It's sam.silver@sims.com, S-I-M-S.
Awesome. And I'll make sure to link it into our show notes so you guys can easily access that. Thank you, Sam, so much.
Great. Thank you.
I really love that Lauren started this whole project not as someone looking for a career change or making the world a greener place, but literally as someone who just was trying to challenge herself and her friends and family to make some type of change in their lives. If you're interested in checking out Green Pop's upcoming Reforest Fest on the weekends of March 16th through 18th and March 23rd to 25th, check out the information on their website. I've linked it in the show notes. Also, if you're interested in helping the people of Cape Town through their water crisis, Green Pop has projects and WaterWise workshops that they're working to host to help educate people on water conservation. We're also hosting our own event, a screening of The Wasted, a food... We're also hosting our own event, a screening of Wasted, the story of food waste, at the Kickstarter headquarters in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, on April 10th at 6:30 p.m. Tickets are on sale now. I've linked that in the notes as well. And we're going to have food and drinks from some amazing companies like Toast Ale from the last week's episode, Proud Pour from Berlin's episode number 10, Rise Products, Food for All, Ankeli, Rescuing Leftover Cuisine, Eleva Coffee, Tea Pigs, Nomad Trading Company, you name it, they're going to be there. It's going to be amazing. And the tickets, which are only $25, includes the food and drinks as well as a take-home eco goodie bag. And just for you Trashy Beauty fans and podcast listeners, we are offering a limited number of early bird tickets at a discount. Use the code TRASHYEB for early bird 5. So that's TRASHYEB5 for a $5 discount on your ticket. The discount is only available until March 9th, so go and get your tickets now. We do anticipate that this event will sell out, and we are looking forward to seeing you there. Have a great week, Eco Warriors. Tune in again next week. Stay green.
Thanks for talking dirty with us. Tune in next week for more Trash Talking with Eco Warriors. For more inspiration, follow us on Instagram @TrashyBeautyCo.